You are listening to episode 124 of the Africana Woman Podcast, The Shades of Love, with Nelly Pulser. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. Hello, beautiful. How are you? By now, you should have heard or seen the Africana Woman Festival website is live. Yo, sis, it feels so surreal. My excitement. Have you been on the website yet? Why not? If not, why not? Well, you must visit. So go to africanawoman.com/festival. Here is what you need to know. The festival is over 2 days in Lusaka, Zambia, from the 2nd to the 3rd of August, 2024. Day one is the Legacy Indaba. Now, this is a symposium with four world-class coaches who will run interactive workshops discussing our theme, Secure Your Future. We're looking at it from, you know, different angles. First of all, what is the legacy you're building? What is it that you really want to create and leave your mark on this earth? Huh? So first, how do you build your legacy? And then how do you protect it financially and legally? And we're also talking about estate planning. Guys, this is going to be deep and it is interactive. It's not where you're just coming to sit and you're just coming to listen, take notes. No. That's not what we do at Africana Woman. You are part and parcel of all the things that we do. So finally, what we're going to end with, the last workshop is really going to talk about how to get past blocks, because that tends to happen in life, right? There's always resistance, which is either external or internal, but how do you get past that? So you're actually going to do what you say you want to do. Listen, the Legacy Indaba is one you do not want to miss, and it is from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Then in the evening, there is a cocktail for the Africana Woman Book Club members. We call ourselves book lovers. Listen, we're going to dress up, look cute, get to meet some authors, interact, play some games. Like, it's going to be fabulous. Okay, so day two, we are starting the day off with a hike, aerobics, and meditation in the early bells. For those of you who like early things, this is going to be around 6 a.m. in the morning, okay? And then at 9 a.m., we have a live podcast recording of your favorite podcast, Africana Woman. Hey. Imagine you can be in the audience. You will get to see the guests that we talk to live. You can ask your own questions and just be part of a whole vibe. Yeah, can you feel my excitement? Okay, so this is going to take us up to the afternoon where we're going to have a VIP lunch for the visionaries and the podcast guests, the guest speakers, I should say. And then there's a food market with all sorts of delicious foods, fresh drinks, and a farmer's market with beautiful farm produce. Oh, I mean, just picture it. DJ playing music in the background. You're just bobbing your head there. Eh? Set up a picnic. There you are in your cute outfit with a sun hat and some shades, sipping on your favorite drink. Ah, I can see it now. Okay, now, most events will have, you know, vendors that kind of just sit there and then they just, I don't know, they're sitting there the whole day. I don't know what's happening. But anyway, we're switching it up, okay? Because we always want you to walk away with value. So we are having what we are calling experiences. Experiences. Meaning, when you go to a stand, you will experience something fun. You will experience something new. You will experience Something educational. For example, we're having a finance clinic where you can go and ask all your burning questions about personal finance or investments. Okay. We have a spa and massage corner. You guys, do you know how much I love massages? Anyway, we have the Lemba Africana Authors Corner where you can buy books from your favorite authors who have featured on the Lemba podcast, and you even get to meet them. They're going to be there. They will sign your books. Yo, guys. Okay. But my personal favorite is the chef demo table. Woo, the chef's table. This is where elite chefs will be teaching you how to cook meals. They will be walking you through step by step, and you know, you get to ask them questions. You know, they're going to be talking about things like how to meal prep, how to incorporate affordable, healthy options in your diet, how do you cook healthy for your children? All those sorts of questions that you have about, you know, embracing a healthy lifestyle. So, we also have a special workshop that's called Write a Letter to Your Vagina. You heard me right. Are you curious yet? Listen, there's so many more experiences. Go check out the full list where at africanawoman.com. /festival. Okay, so to end the festival, we're gonna be ending on a high. Yo, dancing, because where Chulu is, there's always dancing. Hey. And we're having a concert in the evening, okay? And this is going to be with the best of Africa's songbirds. I did say Africa, I didn't say Zambia. Africa's songbirds. So, what a vibe. Are you telling me you can afford to miss the Africana Woman Festival? Like what? We are expecting the whole Africana woman community to come for this. Meaning, even if you're not from Zambia, this festival is for you. We are also looking into flights and accommodation discounts. So keep a lookout on the website on our socials for more information on that. I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear. Oh my gosh, I wish I was in Zambia. Oh my gosh, everything happens in Lusaka. No. There are things like planes, there are cars, buses, all sorts of transportation modes, and they will get you to Lusaka. It's just planning. We have exactly 4 months. Let's start planning, okay? Plus, Zambia is beautiful, guys. It should definitely be on your top 5 countries to visit in Africa, okay? So, you lady that is in a different part of the country, that is in a different part of Zambia, I'm just saying, I'm appealing to you, okay? Start applying for your leave now. You can also take advantage of the accommodation discounts we have on offer in case you don't have a relative or a girlfriend that you can stay with in Lusaka. All that to say, there are early bird tickets available right now. Yes, sis, right now. You can buy a ticket like now. Ha! We have a flash sale that expires on Saturday, 30th March at 11:59 p.m. You definitely want to grab your tickets now because they will never, as in never, ever be this low again. You can buy for either a single event or you can buy for the whole 2 days. It's all on the website africanawoman.com/festival. We also have wholesale group tickets available for corporations, organizations, or associations. So please reach out to africanawoman@gmail.com for more information on our group tickets. Clearly, this is the event of the year. All roads lead to Lusaka, Zambia on 2nd to 3rd August for the Africana Woman Festival. I will definitely tell you more about it from here on out. So just prepare yourself. This is all I'm talking about now. So our conversation. All right, let's get to our conversation for today. So we are talking to Zimbabwe's entrepreneurial superstar, Nelly Pulser. Oh, lady, you will enjoy this conversation. We talk about everything, ging, ging. If you already know about Nelly, I promise you that this conversation will open different dimensions of this woman, and you're going to learn something new about her. She is a high flyer, high flyer and definitely someone to watch. And I am incredibly honored to have sat down with her for this luscious conversation. Please enjoy. Nelly Polsa is the co-founder of Graphic House Vim, a Zimbabwean-registered business that offers quality graphic design, printing, and branding services, and had extended their services to the events industry. Nelia is an entrepreneur who has dedicated herself to self-development and the field of entrepreneurship, and as a result, has been awarded multiple awards, including the 100 Voices for Our Planet Award, a Tony Elumelu Foundation Grant Award, and Top 50 Most Remarkable MSME Founders 2023 by MSME Africa. Nelia was also acknowledged as 25 Women Trailblazers in STEM by Girls in STEM Trust Zimbabwe. She recently won Businesswoman of the Year Northern Region under the MegaFest Awards in Zimbabwe and was nominated African Disruptor of the Year by the Christian Women Entrepreneur Network Award. Nelly would love to see other women and girls take up their space in the entrepreneurial world. Hence, she has begun a journey of mentoring other female entrepreneurs through three main platforms: the Girls in STEM Trust, the AWE program with the US Embassy initiated program, and Girls Who Print Africa. Nelly's life goal is to help build safer and more peaceful learning environments for all African children in line with sustainable development goals by the use of design, print, and branding tools at her disposal through her nonprofit, Lerato Trust. Guys, please help me welcome Nelly to the Africana Woman Mic. Hi.
Hi, Julie, how are you?
I am great. So good to have you here. My goodness, you are so accomplished, lady.
I'm so honored to be here as well, and honored to speak to all the African women.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. So I always start with, what is your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory would be spending time with my dad. My dad used to work in Botswana, and every weekend he would come to Zimbabwe. The first thing he'd do when he'd come to Zimbabwe is he'd ask for his little girl, and that was me. I was the only girl in my family. And he'd say, come into the car and let's go for ice cream. And when we'd get to, in Zimbabwe, there's Creamy Inn. So he'd take us to Creamy Inn and he'd get there and he'd say to me, pick whichever ice cream you'd love. And I would just go crazy and I'd say to the lady selling the ice cream, I'd say, okay, I'm not gonna pick from your menus. I'm gonna tell you how I want my ice cream. And she, you know, they'd be so patient and they'd listen to say, okay, how do you want your ice cream, little lady? And I'd tell them, add fruits and add this and add that. And I'd make up my own ice cream. And I'd be so excited because when I'd leave, I'd feel like a princess whose dad just spoiled her rotten. That's my favorite childhood memory.
That is so sweet. I love that. And you
Yeah.
are in which town in Zimbabwe?
I'm in Bulawayo.
I see. So you're born and raised there. You're still there?
Actually, I was born in Botswana.
Oh, okay.
And yes, my parents used to work in Botswana. And they came to Zimbabwe after quite a number of years. I think almost they were there for over a decade. And then they came this side to settle down, sort of to when they decided to buy a house. That's when we moved back to Zimbabwe. And I was raised here because I only came here, I think I was about 3 years old. And so what I know is Bulawayo.
Yeah.
And of most of my childhood up to adulthood, I've been here. So this is home for me.
Wow, wow. So what was Bulawayo like then when you just came back? What do you remember about it?
Bulawayo for me, when we came back, it was like this beautiful city where you could get anything and everything. The little childhood memory I have of the city is, having a city where you could get everything. Everything was available in Bulawayo. I always tell my children now to say, when we were young, you could go to the shops and you could shop. Everything was so affordable for our parents. And that's what I remember. I remember you could ask for anything and you could get it. And you could go into town. It was a beautiful place. Everything was available. So it was just a beautiful place. I remember even schools. The schools were all the same. Hey, you couldn't really tell the difference between a private school or a government school because the schools were just the same. So for me, that was like a wow for the city of Bulawayo.
Wow. Now, what did you do? What did you study when you went to university?
Oh, I studied accounting, strangely enough, but yeah. A lot of people don't believe me, but yeah, I studied accounting. I chose accounting as a field of study because when I was growing up, it was like the one thing for your parents to say, my child has achieved. It was if she got high grades. I think you must go and be an accountant because accountants earn a lot of money. So I started accounting when I went to university.
So when you entered the job market, did you know that, okay, maybe I'm not gonna stay long in this field, or did it take some time?
It took some time because when I got into the job market, I actually got in. I loved, well, when you start something, when you start learning something, you grow into it, you start to love it. So I grew into accounting and I started to love it. I knew everything. With me, you can throw anything at me, I can learn it and I can master it. So with accounting, I really got to master what accounting was. And it became something that I loved doing. You could put financials in front of me and I could really analyze them. And so I grew to love accounting. And you find that even in the field, I quickly rose up the ladder because it was something I was good at. I recall very well part of my employment history was that I worked for a company. It was called Lobels. And at the time when I started working for Lobels, I was there as a debtor's clerk, and I was there for about the first 3 months. They normally say the first 3 months are like your probation period, where they see whether you're a good fit for the position. So during probation period, when I was done with my probation period, they came back to me and they said, you know what? We're supposed to be formalizing you as the debtor's clerk here, but we're offering you a position as the accountant of Lobos. And I was like, oh my goodness. Those are good memories from the past in that you quickly, people identify your strengths so quickly. And strange things happen. You can quickly rise up the ladder, and I rose up so fast in on that ladder. And even in terms of later on in the years, while I was in that role of the financial accountant, you find that I also took up the role of the acting finance manager because I was so meticulous in the way that I did my work, and I believe I gave the organization good value for the time that I was with them.
Yeah. So on a more private note, what was happening around that time that you were doing accounting?
At that time, I remember very well that I had actually, I had, when I joined Lobos, I had just become a single mother I had gone through a terrible, terrible divorce, and I had gone through a journey where I got out of an abusive relationship, and I had to make a conscious decision to say, you know what, I need to pull myself out of this relationship and stand on my own, even if I don't have much, but I need to make that conscious decision. I remember my last straw was when the man at the time, actually, he was hitting me in front of my daughter. And I think that for me drew the line, because I was so worried to say, she's so young. She was 3 years old at the time. And I said, she's so young, but what's the memory that she's going to remember? The memory she's going to remember of love is seeing this man beating up this woman and kicking her outside on the pavement, out just outside the house. And I said to myself, I need to make a conscious decision that I'm going to say no to this. And I'm going to draw the line right here. And even if I don't have the material, at that time, I remember it was in between jobs. I hadn't yet joined Nobles. So I said to myself, even if I don't have the money to take care of her, even if I don't have anything that is mine specifically, I still need to make that decision to draw the line and move forward and find myself, as long as this little girl is fine. So I then went back to my mother's house. And you know, in Zimbabwe, you don't go back to your mother's house. It's terrible. The experience is terrible. Everyone looks at you as a woman.
Was that the first time that you had left?
No, actually, I had left before then. I remember I once went home like for a good 2 weeks. In those 2 weeks that I left and I went to my mother's house, I couldn't take it. What had actually happened is I had been hit and I'd gone to work. And while I was at work, I realized that I can't sit. I'm in so much pain. And at that point, I said to myself, you know, is this how it's going to be like forever? So I chose to say, you know what, I'm just going to take my bags and I'm going to go home. And when I went home, I was there for about 2 weeks. In those 2 weeks, I remember my mom's relatives would come and visit during those, I think because they had heard that she's come back home, something is up. And at that time, I recall very well, I was always in my room out. I wouldn't go out of the room because I was still trying to process a lot of things. Now, these relatives would come and all the advice they could give me was, you need to go back. Something went wrong between the two of you. And they never really asked to say what went wrong. They just said, you know, something went wrong between the two of you. And, you know, when you're still young in marriage, you tend to make such drastic decisions. So our advice is that if anything, you guys have given yourselves enough space, you need to go back. And so I didn't want to seem rude. And though I felt that no one has taken time to ask me what I'm going through, no one has taken time to ask what went wrong. They just concluded that, you know, she's wrong, she's here, so she better go back. So I just didn't want to be rude. So I said, okay, I hear you, what you're saying. And then I simply just packed my bags and I went back. And, you know, when I went back, no one actually took time to ask me, is everything now okay now that you're back home? Everything was like, it's back to normal. She's back at her house, so things move on. And, you know, those are things that when it was now time for me to make that, to draw that line and say, it's time for me to leave, I had to think about it to say, I once left and no one really asked me what went wrong and they didn't really care, but they told me to go back. And now I'm making a decision to leave forever. They're going to come and say more things. So I said, I need to prepare myself because this time around, I'm not coming back. And yeah, I had to brace myself, but I needed to make that decision. I think the biggest motivator was my little girl, looking at her and seeing what she had gone through and what she had seen, I said, no, I need to make a better decision, not for myself, but for her, so that she will grow up and she will know the difference between right and wrong. And that decision starts from small things like these.
But then how was that experience still? I think I had interrupted you earlier when you're saying that you went back to your mom's house and, you know, people don't do that. So what happened?
Yeah. No, people don't do that. You know, it's that if you've actually spoken to a lot of, I think it happens in the African culture. It doesn't necessarily happen just in Zimbabwe, but generally in the African culture where you have to do things in a certain way that's acceptable. Anything out of that is unacceptable. So for me, it was a time of emotions, a lot of emotions. And I spent most of my time crying because, you know, when you're still young, and I think at that time I was about 26. When you're still young, you look at life as in, especially when you leave university, the highlight is everybody's going to get married, you're going to have this happy family, and everything's going to be rosy afterwards. So I expected that. I found the love of my life, and my life is going to be rosy, and we're going to build this beautiful life together. And then life doesn't turn out that way. So I didn't expect what I got out of it. That I didn't expect. It was very emotional for me. It was something I had to deal with and counsel myself, because even counseling alone, it was something that was unheard of. You can't go for counseling. What is counseling? Counseling is not for us. You have to be strong. So I had to counsel myself and tell myself, you know what, Nelly, you are stronger than the situation you're facing, and you're bigger than this, and you can get out of this, and one day it's going to be okay. It was really hard. I had to find like support structures that could help me go through what I was going through, because I was all alone. I had no family. My family was there physically. My dad, of course, at that time had already passed away. He passed away when I was still in first year in university. So I didn't really, my mom is an amazing person. Don't get me wrong. She's totally amazing. But she was, I think because she had never walked that type of journey, she couldn't really assist me. So I was in this space where I was all alone, and I needed to find a way to get out of that space. So for me, the one thing that got me out of that space was my Christian walk. So a lot of people tend to ask to say, Nelly talks a lot about Christianity. It's because that's what got me out of my situation. I learned to depend on God, and the people who were there for me and who could counsel me and who could understand and allow me to cry and take out all that pain during that time was the people from my church. So for me, I needed that. I really, really needed it. And they helped me. They helped me find myself, because soon after that, that's when I then, in my career, I then moved to Lobos, took up a new job. When I took up the job, I was actually trying to run away. The man used to come to my workplace, and he'd be intoxicated, and then he'd come to my workplace and decide he wanted to tell me all these things in front of everybody. And I felt that no. I need to change the environment and go to a place where he can't find me. We're in the same town, but I needed to find that place where I knew that he doesn't know where I work. He doesn't know, he knows where I stay, but he couldn't come because of my mother. But at least the workplace, I needed to cover myself and make sure that I was protected and I was safe, and I'd go to work and not worry. Because even the guys I used to work with at the time, they used to say the moment he'd walk in, I'd freeze. For me, it was the whole room got cold, and I think, oh my goodness, am I safe? I mean, this man tried to hit me with golf sticks. So when I think about that, I needed a safe place, a place where I could go to and I'd feel safe. And for me, that's what my workplace gave me that safe space.
That is awful. But you know what? It's interesting because I think some people have two different experiences of the church, right? Because I don't know if it's still true today, but where you say, marriage is for life. Obviously, we're not saying that, marriage is a bad thing. But if you're hurting, then and your life is at risk, then you should be leaving. But you go to the church and they'll be looking at you like, what? You got divorced, and they have that experience. But I'm glad that your experience with the church was different, where they were a support system for you and saying, hey, we're going to pray with you. We're going to support you during this journey. So I think that's amazing.
I think to look for me, that judgmental side came through probably some of the congregants. They would have that judgmental side. But what I loved the most was the fact that the leaders of the church, the leaders of the church were the ones who supported me. They could understand to say, the pain this girl has walked through is so much. We need to be there for her. And I think that's something that's important. Safe space should always be a place of support and comfort. And that safe space is important. It's important for anyone who goes through a traumatic situation. They need that safe space.
Well, I love a love story. So you are now married, and just tell us about how, I guess, I always look at how sometimes a woman, it's easier for a man to move on from a relationship, right? So let's say you got married when you're young, and you find that I think a lot more women who get married, who divorce rather at a younger age, tend to stay single for longer, or just stay, they don't get attached again. Whereas a man will be like, oh, he's moved on, he's even got more kids, whatever, he's got a new family or whatever. But that's not the case with you. So I always love to hear from people who've had your type of experience.
Chulim, for me, I stayed a good 7 years in that space where I didn't want to be with any man. I didn't want to be in a relationship. I couldn't trust a man anymore. 7 whole years where I moved from a space of not trusting someone to a space where I said, you know what, I really don't care. Now, if they keep bothering me, I'm going to use them. So, you go through these phases. I think they're actually stages that you have to go through. And I went through those stages and I got to an I don't care stage. And then I got over the I don't care stage. I then just made a conscious decision as I was going through. You go through a relationship and then you say, okay, this is not working. This is not right. Or this is not working out for me. Let me let go of this relationship and start on a clean slate. And then that's what I did. And I got onto a clean slate. And when I got onto the clean slate, I was alone, I think, for a good 2 years, I think, a year or 2 years. And that was the last 2 years of the 7 years, of which on those last 2 years, I met someone who just absolutely blew my mind. And he was so, where you meet someone and there's so much peace around this person, and where when you can tell someone that you don't like something and they don't judge you, they don't get angry, they don't blow up, but they allow you to say, I don't like this. And they try and understand, okay, so if you don't like this, I did it because of one, two, three reasons. And communication starts. And you start to realize to say, there are some relationships where it's not about, I say this and you do it. But there are relationships where there's communication And you can say how you feel, and you don't get hit for it. You don't earn money, and someone tells you to say, "I'm not giving you money because you earn your own money." And you first have to tell me how you use your money first, and put a breakdown, write it down, and tell me how did you spend the money, and then I will then be able to tell you whether I can give you my money. You meet people who don't really care about money to that extent, where if you need money for anything, they're there and they say, "You know what? It's because I love you, I'm going to help you. It's because I care for you, I'm going to take care of you." You know, it's a totally different life. And you start to see that there's a totally different life, a life where you can be yourself, your absolute self, and no one is going to judge you for being yourself. And I think I then realized to say love comes in different shades. Some people's love is because of their background that makes them love in the way that they love. Some people's ex understanding of love is totally different. It's peaceful. It's, you know, colorful. That's someone else's expression of love. And I got to meet that side of love, and I got to give it a chance, because as I got to see that this person is different, this person is gentle, this person loves genuinely, I got to see a different color of love. And that changed my perception of love. And I believe that every woman deserves that perception of love. Every woman deserves to experience that type of love. Because it's not every bad experience that is meant to break you and make you totally hate love. But a bad experience can just be God trying to show you to say, there's this side so that you can appreciate when a good side comes. And that's just my love story. That's just my new love story.
So
And you know,
beautiful. I love how you articulate that. It's so, yeah, so beautiful. Oh my goodness. Okay, so you are an entrepreneur,
Yes.
and you have a successful business. Tell us how it was born. And I think a lot of people, you're in Zimbabwe, and from the outside looking in, we're like, oh my goodness, the economic state of Zimbabwe. How are people thriving? So how have you done it?
Okay, I think for me, the success, or should I say the little success that I've achieved so far, because my picture of success is way, way bigger. But the little success that I've managed to achieve so far, started off, I think, when we started the business, it was just something small that my husband had actually started because of his journey. And when he started it off, it was just a small little business that started off with a tiny little printer. But when I came along in the vision that he was growing, and I guess also with my background in accounting, I then could see bigger and brighter, and I could see his determination to make this work. You know, he was so dedicated to it, and he wanted this business. Of course, I think he had a dream to see it grow and become something big, but what he had started, he was so dedicated to the consistency of it continuing as a business, which is something that I believe entrepreneurs, startup entrepreneurs fail to do, is that no matter how difficult the challenges you face in business, you need to, it's your dedication and your consistency that allows the business to continue. So the continuation of a business is solely dependent on your dedication and your consistency. You know, just merely opening the business every morning at a particular time, every morning consistently, allows the business to continue. So even if you know that particular day or the day before business was so hard, I didn't make anything. It's the consistency of waking up in the morning at that particular time and opening it up to the market that allows the business to continue. And that was something that I learned even as we were growing the business, that some days are good, some days are bad, but it was the consistency of us opening up the business every day and starting a new day on a new leaf that allowed the business to continue. And as the business continued, you gain the trust of the market. So we soon got that trust of the market, and that's when we allowed ourselves to dream. And I was just fortunate that I had partnered with someone who had given me that space to dream and allowed me that space to dream and to come up with ideas. I'm a natural strategist. I can sit down and strategize no matter what time of the day. I can sit down and strategize. And he allowed me that space to strategize and say, you know what? I'm thinking we can grow the business in this way. I'm thinking we can offer this service, because even though I'm very good at analytics, I could listen to the customer and I could hear the customer is thinking this and the customer is asking, why don't we offer this? And I would come back to him because he had that background of being in that industry for a long time. So with him, it was more of I'm taking my ideas and my strategies, and I'm giving him, because he's been in the industry for long, and he could tell me to say, you know what, so-and-so tried this, and this is how it didn't work, and these were the reasons why it didn't work, and we could work around it. And I think it was just strategic to bring the two of us together to run a business. And even if it was Zimbabwe, we still took, he took his experience in the industry, and I took my accounting background in industry, and we used what we had to grow this vision. We used what we had to say, even if we're working in a hyperinflationary economy, let's give the business the respect it deserves, and let's give Zimbabwe the respect it deserves by actually trying to run a business and run it in this market, difficult as it may be, but give it the respect it deserves so that it can actually grow into something. And that's what we did. And we allowed it to grow, and we put our efforts and worked endless hours, nonstop. Sometimes we'd work like right through the night just to deliver. But because we knew that we have a vision to grow this thing, and we have a vision that is much bigger than what we are seeing today. And the only way we could possibly achieve that was with our dedication, with our commitment, with us dreaming bigger than what we were seeing and trying out whatever ideas came into mind to say, let's try this. Let's try it out and let's see how the market responds. I mean, we tried things that the market didn't take well, because we were just experimenting, and the market would reject it, and we'd say, okay, that's a learning curve, that's not working, let's drop it, let's pick up something else, let's try something else. And that's what really got us as far as we are today in the difficult economy that we function in. But that's what took us this far, and I'm so grateful that we tried out everything that we tried out, and we never tried to judge the Zimbabwean economy or the Zimbabwean market based on what people's perceptions were of Zimbabwean market. We just said, you know what, let's try it. This is what we have, and this is the country that we're in, and this is home. Let's try it and let's see if it works or it doesn't work. And it's amazing how ideas can start just as an idea, but they can become something amazing.
You know, one of the main One of the major challenges that SMEs identify, and particularly SMEs that are run by women, is funding, access to funding. And I just wanted to hear from you, what are practical finance funding strategies that you have implemented in your business?
Okay, for us, I think our first challenge in business in terms of funding was that we were, I think a big challenge for us was that we're from Zimbabwe. No offense to any Zimbabwean, but yeah, I think because of our economy, it's very difficult for people to want to invest in Zimbabwe. So the first thing that we did is we realized it's so difficult to get funding. What we can do is we can save. And so that was the first thing that we did. We saved our own money. Everything we made from the business, we saved it. We saved it. It was painful. It was really, really painful. But we saved our money and we kept on saving. And we always had a goal to say, if we can save up to so much, we can do this. And we saved and saved. And, you know, we achieved a lot because we would save and we made a conscious decision to save. And we would make sure that when it was in a certain amount, we then invest in this particular equipment. And we'd know that this equipment would give us, it would allow us to offer a different service. So we saved. That was the first thing. The second thing was, I think my biggest strength as a woman entrepreneur in this particular era was networking. Networking was a huge strength because it connected me to other platforms that where you could actually apply for funding. And that's when I went for training under the US Embassy. And I actually got to be trained on how to apply for funding. And I thought that was an amazing skill, you know, a skill I can never ever put value in terms of monetary value to it, because I carry that with me every program I get into, every application I put in. I use that because at least someone took the time to actually teach me how to go about applying for funding. And I appreciate that more than anything. Like I said, I can never put a value to it. It was invaluable. And after that, I applied for my first funding under the USADF, and that one wasn't successful, but I didn't give up. I didn't give up because I took that which I'd learned under the US Embassy and I applied that on my next funding opportunity, which I believe at that time was the Tony Elumelu Foundation. And I got into that program and I thoroughly enjoyed that program. But you know, the amazing thing about platforms like the Tony Elumelu Foundation is that it's a platform where a startup can go on to learn as much as you can. And it is so open to funding African entrepreneurs. If you just show potential, that is a platform that I'd suggest you go on to. It will give you a startup. And I applied on the Tony Elumelu Foundation for the grant opportunity. And I came up with my idea and I had to really document it. And then we actually went through a pitching session. So they taught us how to pitch, and then we had to pitch, and oh my goodness, that was an experience of a lifetime. I remember I was so nervous for that one, but then the good thing about it is I did my pitch and I was given funding, and that funding was, you know, when you say, when you, after going through a year of putting in hours of training, and you know, Zimbabwe internet is a very expensive. I know they always say that it's the cheapest in Africa, but hey, for us Zimbabweans, it is expensive because we won't be having the money. But you actually put in that money and you go through the trainings for that, And at the end of the day, when you come out successful, you really say, you know what, it was worth it. Even if it costs me more, I'd do it again. So that platform was a good platform for the women entrepreneurs. Even for the Tony Elomeni is actually open to men as well. So the men can actually go onto that platform and pitch as well. That is a very open platform for them. After that, I started to see, you know, the side where the other Africans get to see, where you can actually go on different platforms. And so with me, I think the platforms that I went on to were not really about the pitching stage. Yes, money is good. You want money for your business, but I really wanted to learn the entrepreneurial side. I wanted to be the best at my business. I wanted it to stand out. I wanted it to grow. And so I went into every program hungry to make sure that everything that they taught me, I'd implement it. Everything that I taught me, I'd implement it. So funding was just an opportunity at the end of the trainings. So I'd advise young female entrepreneurs to look out for funding opportunities, whether they come with training or they come without training. There are so many opportunities online. Apply for the funding, do the training, don't get tired along the way and drop out. Do the full training and apply for the funding. If you don't get it, it's okay. It's a learning curve. Some funding opportunities actually give you feedback on where you went wrong. Get the feedback, work on your pitch, work on where you want to go to. Maybe your pitch idea is not the best idea. Change it. Don't be afraid to change it. Change it and move on to the next thing. And you'll find that as you keep going onto different platforms and you keep pitching, you get, even if you get $500 as an award or as a grant, it's a plus because $500 can contribute even to your own marketing in your business. It makes a world of a difference. So don't really look at saying I want 200 or 1 million, but look at what am I going to do if I get that funding, and how is it going to contribute to my business? And so that's how I always looked at it. And so I'd advise you go on platforms, different platforms, training platforms, apply for funding, get taught how to apply for funding, and apply for funding. And the benefits I can guarantee you are amazing. Also, on those programs, I also advise individuals to get onto them because it's an opportunity to network. It's an opportunity to get to know other people. I met one of my amazing friends in who I met along the journey. She started off as a mentor, and eventually we became very good friends, Lumbi Mlambo. And I tell you, today my business is what it is because I met someone during the Tony Elumelu training, and she has taught me so much on my journey of entrepreneurship. So sometimes training programs seem like, hey, it's just a lot of work and you're putting in so much money for the training, but the benefits outweigh the amount of money that you invest in some of the trainings. So don't look down upon them. If you don't get the grant, at least get the networks. The networks will grow your business in an amazing way. Collaborations, we've done so many collaborations. We've impacted, I remember the one opportunity I got was to collaborate when she was putting up we were putting up a solarized borehole in Matobo District. And I was coming in with the branding aspect of the program, and she was coming in. She had gotten a bit of funding to actually drill the borehole. And then we did a collaboration with a third guy. His name was Leo, and he owns a steel manufacturing company. And he came in to do the fabrication for the borehole a tank. And it was just amazing. We came in together, the three of us, and we went. I tell you, that borehole has changed people's lives in Matobo. And I will never have it any other way. If you can get into a program, network, and collaborate, you can change people's lives by coming together with other entrepreneurs and doing projects in different places. Today, we've done so many projects together, so many collaborations we've done together. And I've even collaborated with other people because I've seen the power in collaboration. And collaboration doesn't just mean you are making an impact on the general community, but collaboration makes your business grow in the process. So if you're looking for growth, that's the route to take as well. I hope I answered your question.
You did, Nelly. This, I've got so many questions. And I'm like, okay, I have two main ones. If you can just indulge me.
All right.
Okay. So you work with your husband. And then people were like, yo, I could never. What is that experience like?
I think working with your husband is, it's a plus. If you are disciplined, both of you, and you respect each other. Business is, it doesn't matter who you partner with in business. It could be a total stranger. But if you award the relationship enough respect, I think you can go far in the business. It's only when things like greed come in and so forth that can mess up a relationship. But if you guys have a clear communication line, if you know what your responsibilities are and what the business partner's responsibilities are, you can actually focus and grow a business. With me and my husband, when we come to work, it's business. It has nothing to do with the relationship that's at home. We respect the business in that way. So we respect our roles in that way. I respect him as a graphic designer. I respect him for his role. I respect the value that he brings to the business. So I can see his gift. I can see his talent in the business and how valuable it is to the business. So I respect that. And I believe that even if you are a woman or a wife in business, give the respect that's accorded to the business. If you see that someone is bringing in value to the business, give them that respect and respect their role in the business. And that way it will grow. The problem comes in when you can't differentiate between home and the business. That becomes a problem. Whatever happens at home stays at home. Whatever happens in the business stays in the business. But if you're going to get into business with your husband, it means you decided to make a decision to get into this business. And you decided that you wanted to grow something and you had a vision for where you wanted the business to go to. So all else should be put aside and we should focus on the end goal. And that's what we do. We focus on the end goal. And every decision is based on where we want to go. If one gets out of line, we have to remind each other to say, you know what? Our end goal is the success of this business. And the success of this business needs us to remain focused. And so I think at the end of the day, we respect that. Yes, we do clash. We have differences where I see things one way and he sees things another way. And we do clash. There are some decisions that we make, even in terms of money, that we say, no, we need to spend money on 1, 2, 3. And I say, no, but at home, we've got 1, 2, 3 problems. And he's saying, no, this is not the time to talk about problems. But I understand, because maybe because I've got an accounting background, I understand where he's coming from. And I understand that owns the business. And this is not how we run a business. And we need to run the business properly if it's going to survive. So you just need to respect each other. You need to make sure that you draw the line when it comes between home and the business. And when you come into those doors of your business, you need to understand to say, now it's business. And we're not going to look at it any other way. In terms of women, I know women have a problem with jealousy and, you know, I'm going to go there. Another woman might come into the place, or women might come, or maybe younger women might come into the business and they could be laughing with your husband and all. You know what? It's business. You need to understand and you need to be able to understand your relationship to an extent where you know that I trust him enough to respect our marriage, regardless of who has come in there and whether they were wearing a short little skirt or not. You need to understand to say, I believe my husband is mature enough to know where to draw the line. And so I will allow him to laugh with whoever he needs to laugh with, just the same way he would allow me to laugh with whoever I laugh with. But we have an understanding to say, when it is time for our relationship, we respect our relationship because we've got children, we've got a family, and we are mature enough to understand that there's a marriage which we respect. We really, really respect, I think, because we've put God in our marriage and we understand that we have to respect our marriage. And then we've got the business and we have to respect the business as well. So I think that's about all the advice I can give on that area.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you went there. I'm glad you went there because some people need to hear that. So my final question, I really did not want to end this conversation without talking about Lerato Foundation. Lerato Foundation. Now, this is your NGO, which is around anti-bullying, and then you're also passing on, you know, practical skills to a younger generation and advocating, you know. I was on your Facebook page and I was going through the videos and I was in utter shock, horrification. I was just like, oh my. I know you did research as you were starting up the foundation. What did you find, Nelly? What did you, I could not believe those videos. I could not.
Lerato Trust. We called it Lerato Foundation initially before we registered it formally. Now it's called Lerato Trust. Lerato Trust. It started off as it started off from a personal perspective. Our daughter, our firstborn daughter, was bullied at school. And when it happened, you know, when kids play in school, we've accustomed ourselves to say they just play, you know. So when she would first come and complain, we would say, it's just playing, you know, that's how kids play, you know, they're just being funny, don't worry about it. And until one day we woke up at home and my daughter could not understand a single instruction. She had totally fallen apart to an extent where she couldn't feed herself, she couldn't dress herself, she couldn't bath herself. And this was a 12-year-old child. And she was an intelligent child. Most people who know me from when my daughter was born right until she was 12 years old, they know she was one of the best children in class. And she had broken down to an extent where she could not do anything. We had to literally bath her, feed her, and start the whole process all over again. And when we were speaking to even teachers from her school, the headmaster, he was shocked to say, is that possible? Can bullying can affect a child that much? And I'm thinking, this is, you people are in the education sector. Surely you should know that it can get to these extreme conditions. And they couldn't believe it. And it was during a time of COVID. So I guess for Zimbabweans, they couldn't understand to say, but it's COVID time. At what point did she become that bad? It had grown to an extent of cyberbullying. And that's when I said, you know what? It seems like there's a gap between actually understanding what bullying can do to a child and the realistic side of it actually happening. There's a gap because people think what they read about bullying can never actually happen in real life. And so we then, you know, we started speaking to parents, other parents, and we realized that this thing was actually prevalent. It wasn't just in her school, but in many other schools in Zimbabwe, I spoke to even parents outside Zimbabwe, some in South Africa, some in Botswana, and they actually said, you know what, this thing is real. It happens, and nothing is actually done about it, you know, especially in Zimbabwe. I'll talk about Zimbabwe because that's when we did the survey and we realized that almost 79% of the children in schools are actually being affected by bullying. And it's so bad that no one is doing anything about it. We simply hear of it, we see the effects, and nothing is still done about it. We continue life in the school environment as normal. And we don't realize that what happens to one child can actually be affecting many other children in the learning environment. And bullying is something that is really terrible because it doesn't stop there. With my daughter, we've actually gone, it's now like 2 years after the traumatic incident. And she went through counseling, fortunately for her, I think maybe because of my background where I went through an abusive relationship and I realized the importance of counseling. So I actually took the initiative with my husband to take her for counseling. And she went through a whole session of counseling. It was multiple sessions actually, until we realized that she's back with us. And we actually saw her recovering. The recovery stages were slow, but they happened. And eventually we realized that, wow, she's back, because she had gone back to doing what she used to do. She loves dancing. And so we realized that she's now dancing. She's now back to listening to music. She's now smiling, which she had stopped doing. And we realized our daughter's back, and we would give the doctor feedback to say, he's a resident psychologist. We gave him feedback to say, she's now smiling, she's now, and he actually helped us a lot because he'd tell us to say, now you can see the difference and now she's recovering and now these are the steps to take from here. And it helped. But we can still see 2 years later that there's still some things that seem a bit fragmented, if I can say, not so clear if she's totally gotten over that. And I understand to say it's a journey. The recovery is a journey, and we need to give it time for it to actually fully happen. But some people don't realize that, and some parents don't realize that bullying is something that, if not dealt with when it happens, years later in an adult life experience, you begin to see the effects of that bullying encounter. And so it was because of that that we then did decided, you know what, let's start Lerato Trust and let's center it around bullying. Of course, after speaking to her, and she had actually said, I think that is a good idea, and I think it could help many other children. And so we said, okay, so let's do this and let's incorporate us, because her personal experience could help the next person. And she had said, I want to help the next person. I don't want them to go through what I went through. And I don't feel any mother should go through what I went through, because it's really, it's a difficult journey. And I'm just grateful that we got out of it. And I believe that we didn't just get out of it just as an experience, but it intentionally came in our direction so that we could do something about it. So we have now started alerting people through awareness campaigns, even on the page. We tell people about bullying encounters. And if there's a bullying encounter at a school, we let people know that there's been a bullying encounter at such a school, and this is what happened, and this is what's happening in the school, so that people know that it's existing, it's there. It might just be a school where your child is. You need to know. That's what's happening. And we felt just alerting people and letting them know that bullying is occurring was not enough. So we decided, let's do something about it. Our business is about design, printing, branding. Let's use what we have to incorporate that as a part of our initiative in the schools. So right now, Lerato Trust is actually trying to involve the schools, where we want to have programs in each school where we actually use a mix of branding and psychosocial therapy and introduce it in the schools So you have the branding visible in the schools to remind the children of how to play their part in creating healthier learning environments. And we have partnered, we're actually doing collaborations with quite a lot of counselors, where we actually want to have counseling sessions in the schools where children can actually speak about their bullying encounters and get advice on how to handle such environments and what part to play. And if we could possibly, we are hoping that we can also have encounters where we actually encounter a bully and we can also then give advice on the side of, you know, it's all about what's your part to play in the learning environment. So we are looking at focusing on the student, we're looking at focusing on the educator on how to play your part in creating safer, more friendly, happier learning environments so that children can excel in those environments, because we believe that a child will excel. Coming from a personal perspective, I saw how my child's education was affected. So we are coming from that perspective to say a healthy learning environment can boost and can advance academic excellence. So that's what we are trying to achieve. At the same time, Lerato Trust has also taken a further step to say, you know what, we own a printing and branding business that started like any other business in Zimbabwe, but has grown to an extent of being recognized around Africa. We are now even award winners on an African platform. So we look at it to say, what can we do for our community? So we want to give children a practical experience of the printing and branding industry before you actually make a choice on the career path to pick. So Lerato Trust is allowing or facilitating that platform together with Graphic House to allow students to come in and actually have that experience. So we are approaching schools, and the schools where we have maybe computer science students, they can actually come and have a practical experience of the printing industry using real real orders to do the work, so that they get that practical experience and then they can decide if this is an industry they'd like to come into. And hoping that if they get time, as a period of time in the industry, they can actually then later on start off at a better space than we started, because we started from the ground. But we are hoping that when they then get into the industry, they can start at a better platform and they can raise the bar in the industry. And that will be beneficial for even companies in the industry when the bar is raised.
You know, I think the work you're doing is so, so important through Lerato Trust, because I know you said that, you know, even if it's not dealt with now, it can, the effects can come up later, but there have also been cases of children committing suicide or attempting to commit suicide. So that's like something that happens in real time as the bullying is going on. So it's something that we should all be very much aware of, and we should all be very proactive about, you know, when it comes to our children. Eesh. This has been such a great conversation. And as we're winding down, I just have four questions for you. Just tell me whatever comes to mind. Okay. So the first question is, in Africana Woman, we have a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. And my first question is, what are you rooted to?
Okay. I don't think I'm rooted on anything else except Christ. As a Christian, I'm rooted on Christ. My decisions are based on my growing relationship, because my relationship doesn't stop growing, my growing relationship with Christ. So every decision I make it not because I'm perfect, no, but I try to wake up every day striving for perfection in terms of my relationship with Christ. So every decision I make, it has to have integrity, because I believe I reflect who Christ is through what I do. So my root is Christ.
What are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Okay, I'm not going to make you a very happy person after answering this question. Okay, nourishing my mind. I read a lot. Besides reading a lot, I read everything actually. I read a lot and I listen to a lot of motivational speakers, motivational, anything that's motivational, I listen to that because I believe what you listen to becomes a part of you. So I try my level best to keep positivity around me. That keeps me sane. It keeps me so sane. And then in terms of my body, unfortunately, like I said, I'm going to disappoint you because I am not a person who does exercising all the time. I try to exercise, but I'm still on the journey of trying to really put myself into a routine for exercise. It's very good for you. It makes you refreshed. I totally, totally subscribe to exercise, but I'm still on a journey to get there. In terms of eating healthy, I always eat healthy. I realize even as you get older, it's important to watch what you eat because it affects how energetic you are and how healthy you generally are. You need to really make sure that you look after yourself. My soul and my spirit, I think you can guess that one. I spend a lot of time in the church. I don't subscribe to marking a register in the church, but I subscribe to actually having a relationship with Christ. So I spend a lot of time in the Word. I try my level best to do what I can. I'm also a Rotarian, so I try my level best to make the environment a better place for everybody with what I have. So anything small that I have, I try to make the place a better place for the next person. So yeah.
So what are your favorite way? No, sorry. Do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
Yes, I do. I believe my weakness is loving people. I'm a very strict person when it comes to doing things the right way, but I'm a very loving person. I love people. I love people to an extent where I feel some people take advantage of me because I love. But I feel it's also become a superpower because you can't make the place a better place for the next person if you don't have love. So it becomes your superpower. You need to love. You need to be able to love the next person enough to help them. You need to love the next person enough to want to see them smile. So you need to have love. You need to love in order to make learning environments better. You need to love. You need to love enough to want to see that change. So yeah, I think I love. I love it's a weakness. It's also a superpower.
And then the last question is, what do you know as a certainty?
What do I know as a certainty? I can say what I know as a certainty is that if you put in enough hard work, dedication, and focus, you will succeed. It's guaranteed. It's a given. It's not magic. It's not magic. It's you need to put in the hard work. You need to put in the dedication, and you need to put in the commitment as well. If you just put in those three, you are guaranteed you will succeed.
Nelly, thank you so much. Please tell the audience, how do they continue to follow you? How do we support you? Where do we find you on this internet?
Okay. On social media, I'm there. I'm on Facebook. I am on Instagram. I'm on Threads. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. I normally am more active on LinkedIn, so you can contact me on LinkedIn. My name on LinkedIn is Nelly Pulsar. And then on email, you can contact me via email. My email is nellypulsar@gmail.com. And then if you need to contact me in terms of Lerato Trust, you can definitely reach us on our email. Our email is leratofoundationzw@gmail.com. There you can reach us. As previously explained, we were initially Lerato Foundation before we were registered. Now we are Lerato Trust. So you can reach us there for any donations. If you want to donate towards school, the branding of a school, we can communicate there and we'll let you know the costs that come with us doing the project at the school. It is not as expensive as it sounds, but it definitely changes the lives of hundreds of children.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I have enjoyed this conversation and I hope you have too. And yeah, this has been good.
Thank you so much as well for having me.
Nelly went through an abusive marriage. She got out alive, praise God. Then 7 years later, she found a different shade of love. That is peaceful and gentle and kind. Look at the woman now. She is literally glowing. She is on fire when it comes to her career. She is thriving, and all because of a different shade of love. I know there's someone who is listening to this who is holding on to an absolutely horrible shade of love. It is mean, it is angry, it is suspicious. You are on high alert all the time. Can I tell you, it doesn't have to be that way. Nelly is a beautiful example of what it looks like when you choose to be in a vibrant shade of love. The interesting part is that all shades are available to you. You just have to choose the one you really want. And I pray you do not settle for violence or mediocre shades. Well, you know what to do. Find Nelly across all social media as Nelly Pulsar. Please give her her roses and tell her thank you. Let her know you heard her on the Africana Woman podcast. And what was your main takeaway? Ladies, ladies, remember Lusaka, Zambia, 2nd to 3rd August, the Africana Woman Festival is happening. Start planning now. Manje, manje, now. The first thing you can do is get your early bird tickets available on africanawoman.com/festival. Please find us on Instagram at Africana Woman, or we have a special Instagram page just for the festival at Africana Woman Festival to keep up to date with all of the good news. My name is Chulu, your host. Till next week, the Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman.